And a good morning. Great to have you with us on this Monday morning, and really great to have with us Rabbi Dov Fisher, who happens to be an attorney also, but he writes columns for, at various times for the Spectator, and absolutely great, great things. And I saw the one you just wrote recently about the ground incursion in Gaza, and I had to get you on. Rabbi Dov Fisher, thank you, Rob, for joining us this morning.
Thanks so much, Alan, for having me.
Tell me about the what you write about. I'm just going to put it out there. The ground incursion to Gaza won't be pretty, but it's necessary. I had these same things said to me by a member of the IAC, the Israeli American Council, who somebody I've known for years. She told me this the Monday after the attack in Israel. We were talking, and she said, you know, it's not going to be just a few days or a few weeks. It's going to be a long-term situation. I said, well, whatever they have to do, they've got to do. But tell me about that. The ground incursion is not going to be pretty, but it's going to be necessary.
This is going to be a mess, but it has to be done. Hamas has had, since the year 2005, 18 years to build an infrastructure of terror and crime throughout the Gaza Strip. What they have is, they have underground tunnels now, virtually under every single street. They have a completely second city, a second Gaza Strip, underneath, where an estimated 40,000, that's 40,000, Hamas terrorists live, like rats, underground. Israel's got to figure out, if they want to put an end to this kind of horror that they just experienced on October 7, how in the world are they going to wipe out those 40,000 people underneath the ground who base themselves in places that are strategically located under hospitals? It's been found that a major Gaza hospital, right underneath it, is the main headquarters of Hamas, et cetera, et cetera. So it's not as simple as Israel just bombing for a week or a month and bringing an end to this, because you've still got those 40,000, and you've got to get them, which means going into the streets of Gaza. It becomes like a Fallujah or like a Bora Bora, and it's going to be very, very messy, where Israel knows that she's going to be sending troops into narrow streets where there are, you know, everything ranging from tunnels underneath, sniper nests on rooftops and in windows of buildings. You've got little drones in people's kitchens that they can send out with payloads they can drop on people, on tanks. You've got IEDs, improvised explosive devices, in the streets. You've got Russian Cornet anti-tank missiles. So it's going to be very perilous. And that's why they're bombing the heck out of Gaza first, to take out as much of that as possible to protect the troops coming in.
Don't you find it amazing, disheartening, but amazing, that as soon as the October 7th slaughter occurred, it wasn't within 12 hours, 24 hours at the most, that, one, demonstrations popped up with pre-made signs. You have to think about this, pre-made signs, and they all were calling for ceasefire at that point. I mean, it's like, I'm going to punch you in the face, and can we not can we get along, okay? It's amazing. This thing was pre-planned on every level.
I have to say, for terrorists whom you would expect to be disorganized, like the kind of lone killers that go on serial killing in the United States, like that guy that just shot up 16 or whatever people in Maine. On the one hand, you have the image of terrorists who are just a bunch of random cutthroats, but actually they're incredibly well organized, incredibly well funded, with millions upon millions of hundreds of millions of dollars. The European Union and the United States, people listening right now, your taxpayer dollars go to Hamas, and they call it humanitarian aid, but that money all works its way to Hamas, so that in the end, your humanitarian dollars are buying humanitarian bombs, humanitarian knives, humanitarian improvised explosive devices. That's your money. As you're listening, every single person listening to this, your tax money, when Biden talks about, I'm going to send $100 million in humanitarian aid to Gaza, it mostly will end up with Hamas. When they cut off, let's say, fuel supplies, and people start screaming there's not going to be enough fuel for the Gaza hospitals. Meantime, Hamas has all the fuel they need from their underground tunnels to launch rockets every single day. There's plenty of fuel. Whatever fuel America sends ends up with Hamas.
And the water, and the food. And they never talk about that. The protesters, the demonstrators, the pro-Hamas, pro-terrorist demonstrators, and their ilk in Congress, they never talk about that. They never talk about the fact that the terrorists hide behind the skirts of women and behind children, using them as their shield. Israelis stand in front of their civilians. These pigs stand in behind their civilians. It's nauseating. And the fact that these protesters don't get that shows me the level of ignorance that we're promoting these days.
And on top of it, it's bringing home to Americans what a lot of us already kind of suspected, and even beyond that knew, that this generation of American colleges has been taken over by left-wingers. Departments in the social sciences, like political science, history, even philosophy and sociology, all are taken over by left-wingers. And if someone, let's say, just gets out of college and gets a PhD and applies for a job, they look carefully at what are your publications, what have you published, and what was your doctoral thesis. And if it seems to be middle of the road or conservative, the department simply doesn't let you get tenure. They don't let you in. They only hire people on the left, self-promoting and self-perpetuating. And as a result, kids sign up for a course, let's say History of the Middle East, and the professor gives them a reading list. And the reading list is a biased reading list. So for 14 weeks of class, two or three times a week, 40 to 50 hours in the classroom, you're discussing a list of books, all of which are biased from the left point of view, and you have a leftist professor teaching it, and then you have a bunch of kids on campus standing outside marching for Palestine, which doesn't exist itself as a fraud, and marching, frankly, against America. And a lot of them aren't even American students. They're foreign students from Arab countries.
Well, I do want to say that Palestine was a general territory, but most of the Palestinians were Jews. There was something called the Palestinian Philharmonic, and that became what? The Israeli Philharmonic. I mean, there were Jews, and the Arabs were not part of that Palestinian basis. Stay with me. I would like you to talk about the protests that have turned to calls for murdering Jews. I mean, we're not just talking about, they started out with this pro-Hamas, pro-terrorist attitude, and they went from the river to the sea and all that crap. But meanwhile, right now, they're also calling for the absolute murder of Jews. I will recount that for you in just a minute. Rabbi Dov Fischer joining us right here on Vegas at 8. We're going to continue in just a moment right here on KXNT. Nana, good morning. Great to have you with us on this Monday morning, and really very happy and honored to have with us Rabbi Dov Fischer. Again, Rabbi, thank you so much for taking your time to join us. We're talking about the issue of the campuses, and I'm saying that the protests that started out just by being pro-Hamas, pro-terrorist, and anti-Israel have now taken a twist because I have seen signs that say murder Jews. I've seen signs that say gas Jews, which to me would be akin on a sociological basis of lynching blacks when you say gas Jews, if you catch the historical relevance there. And now the threats that are posted at Cornell University, where they hired that one professor, supposedly, I guess they didn't vet him well enough, the one who was exhilarated and energized by the attack on Israel on the 7th. There was a threat that was posted on a website that targeted 104 West, where the Center of Jewish Living is located on campus. And in this post, this person calls, this is what they say, the threats call for people to follow a Jewish person home and, quote, slit their throats, end of quote. Quote, rats need to be eliminated from Cornell, end of quote. They're calling for the gassing, the murder, the slitting of throats of Jews. This is not just a matter of a simple First Amendment speech protest. This is a call to murder.
People have no idea, first of all, how vicious it has become. And you've laid it out, really, Alan. it has become beyond vicious. People are, you see this on social media, exactly what you just said, Alan. And you read on college campuses, and you even see some interviews on Fox and elsewhere of Jewish students actually complaining that they're afraid and they're scared. The thing is, I must say, the way to deal with those kinds of threats is not by hiding in a cave and whining and saying, I'm scared and I'm afraid. The way to deal with those threats at this moment in time is to come out strong in force. If I were a student right now at Cornell, and please understand that I'm not just talking off the top of my head, because I was a student at Columbia University, and it was a time that we had other things. And I did what I'm going to say now, I did when I was at Columbia, and it worked. If I were a student at Cornell right now, with them threatening that the special section at Cornell, there's a kosher cafeteria where students who are strictly kosher in terms of what they eat normally go there, and there's been threats about, we're going to attack the kosher cafeteria, I would bring 100 students. Normally, let's say there are 20 students, because most of them are not Orthodox at Cornell. I'd bring 100 students, including non-Jews who were sympathetic, including Jews who are not kosher, but they'd be willing to do this. You go in force. You're threatening us to go to this cafeteria. We'll come out 100 strong, and we're not afraid of you. Because when you act like that, then they back down, and they leave you alone. It's that they smell weakness. And the problem is that too many Jewish kids were raised by privileged, rich, suburban, liberal, progressive, woke Jewish parents, where the whole philosophy of life is victimology, mm-hmm. that as wokes and as progressives, we always relate to the victim. And that's what Black America has tragically turned itself into, seeking all kinds of government assistance and handouts, claiming victimology. So they raise the kids to think of victimology. And now the kids are responding, well, we're victims now. Well, that's not the way a Jew responds. Jews ought to be standing there strongly and defiantly, how dare you threaten me? This is not Auschwitz. This is Harvard Yard. This is Columbia University's College Walk. How dare you threaten us? We're ready right now. You come, you foreign students who don't even belong in this country and hate this country, and whose country sent people to blow up the World Trade Center and cheered it. You come out here and take us on. We're ready to stand up for what we are. And let me tell you, if there were one strong, good fist fight, no one's going to take knives at Columbia and Barnard. Just turn into a fist fight, the university presidents would turn around overnight, and they would slam down all this Hamas crap. But the
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, the problem is that the Jews are too busy whining. I'm actually angry at the Jews, Alan. I got to tell you, I'm angry at those Jewish students, because I'm waiting for some Jewish students to get up and say, we're not going to stand for this.
Absolutely the case. I someone in our synagogue on Saturday at services said, this before it started, said this is time to bring back the JDL, the Jewish Defense League. And, of course, my mind wandered over to Meir Kahana, who to me was a great human being. And maybe it is time to bring back the Jewish Defense League. And I want to also say this, that the protests that are going on, that the riots that are going on, there's the one that occurred in Russia at an airport in Russia. The rioters were heard yelling Allahu Akbar and other anti-Semitic slogans. To me, at least, the phrase Allahu Akbar today is akin to the new Heil Hitler.
Absolutely. It's some dirt hole called Dagestan, one of the various stands under the former Soviet Union. And as you say, it was a flight, I guess, from Israel, where they do have landing rights. And these pro-Palestine rioters went crazy. And as you said before the break, the term Palestine itself is a fraud. There are no such people as Palestinians. They are Arabs in Judea Samaria. And the term Correct. Palestine was associated with the land of Israel forever, for 2,000 years. Everyone, if you look it up in old encyclopedias in the days that they made them, if you look them up in a library, Palestine was the land of Israel. The Encyclopedia Britannica described Rabbi Isaac Abraham Isaac Cook as the chief rabbi of Palestine. Now you tell me, Arafat had a chief rabbi, Hamas had a chief rabbi.
Yeah.
The chief rabbi of Palestine, the land of Palestine, is Israel, as you mentioned before, and the Jerusalem Post, before the country became independent, was known as the Palestine Post. The Irgun.
I'm against the clock.
Sure.
It's a hard break. Yeah, the Irgun, to me, heroes from 1948.
And they raised money in America as the American League of Free Palestine.
Rabbi, thank you so much for joining us. I know we'll do it again. I appreciate you taking your time. Be well, be healthy, and we'll talk very soon.
Thanks so much for having me. Bye-bye.
Rabbi Duff Fisher joining us right here on Vegas at 8. My final thoughts coming up next.